We're not trying to be the biggest trucking company.
Right.
So we're not going to even compete in that space. So we want to try to be the best.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean we have to be the best in the US. It means we have to be the best in our customer carrier network.
Right.
So you're not like, it's not like you're competing against everybody. You're competing against, like, when you're in a customer, are you one or two?
Right.
And if you're two, why aren't you one? Like, that's a good question to answer. So we just remind them we're still here. We call them, you know, every other month or every half year, depending what they say.
Right.
And we just remind them we're still here. We're not going anywhere. When you need us, let us know. And then that seems to work. Like, over time, we start, you know, it'll take 2-3 years to get a customer. But once you get them, we work hard to align. And, you know, our, what we talk about in our business is we want to be an extension of their business. So they're not in the trucking business. They might be manufacturing, but we want to be an extension of them.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the podcast Caution Wide Ride, brought to you by Compliance Navigation Specialist. I'm Luke, your host, and with me today we have Ryan Good, CEO of RGM Transport. Founded in 2005, RGM Transport is a fast-growing asset-based trucking company specializing in hauling building products, steel, aluminum, and high-value equipment across North America. With operations in both Bethel, Pennsylvania and Buckeye, Arizona, RGM serves all 48 continental states and eastern Canada. CEO Ryan Good, who grew up in the trucking industry, took over the company in 2012 after starting with just 3 trucks. And under his leadership, RGM has expanded to 55 trucks today with a diverse fleet of flatbeds, step decks, RGNs, dry vans, and reefers. The company is committed to excellence in service, safety, and compliance, and RGM continues to grow while maintaining strong partnerships with its customers and a driver-focused company culture, which we're going to break all of this down in this podcast. But Ryan, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
All right. So I'm curious about the beginning. Take us back there. How did RGM Transport begin, and what inspired you to start your own trucking company?
Yeah. So, I mean, it started back when, like, I grew up on a farm. So my dad had a farm, and he did a lot, like, he had a lot of acres, so like 1300 acres or something. So he had like a small fleet of trucks, like 4 trucks, and they would sell the feed and stuff. So we farmed, we had a dairy farm and lots of like cash crop. And then we also had the trucks. And I was always more interested in the trucks. So that's kind of where it started. And then I went into construction, you know, from 15 to about 20. I had a great leader there that like kind of got me on self-development. So I started like priming my mindset to like he really helped me change my trajectory there.
Awesome.
So then when I quit doing construction, I went in 08, got slow. I went and drove for my dad, and I drove for a couple years, but there was a day I remember clearly, like, where it was like, I realized that, hey, I want to work with people. So I started looking for an office job. Trucking was kind of, you know, what I thought. The only thing I really knew, I was early in my career, so I was like, well, I could probably dispatch. It'll get me outside of the truck. I enjoyed trucking, but I did want to work with more people.
Moving from the truck to dispatch, I'm just curious, because that's a different grind, and it's a grind, too.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, what was that like?
So it was a little nuts. So, like, I was able to start with only 3 trucks. Like, we only had 3 trucks, so it worked in... like it worked me up to, you know, a dozen or 15. So, but it definitely, I was exhausted, mentally, not physically,
because
you're sitting in an office, but you're still tired.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. So, you know, you got into the industry at about 23, you met someone at a truck show. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me more about that moment? Just sort of how did that all formulate?
Yeah, so that was crazy. So once I made the decision, my wife and I, we were trucking, and once we made the decision, hey, I'm going to start looking for an office job, that was probably in May of 2010. And then I think it was at TFC in Lebanon. There's a truck show up there. I was talking to one of my friends, and one of his, somebody he knew came up, and they, through the discussions, it was the three of us, figured out this other guy named Gary. He had a small trucking company. He had started in 05, and he wanted to sell those and get out of it and go farming. So, I mean, that...
He's like, here's an opportunity.
Yes. It was just like, that was a, like, I chalked that up to, you know, a God ordained moment there. Yeah. And I was like, that was pretty cool. So that's what got it started. That was in June. I actually left it till in September to have the first meeting with him. Like we talked about at the truck show. And then I called him, I think it was a, you know, maybe it was a month or two later, August or something like that. And I was like, hey, I should at least go and see what this is about. And we talked it through, and by, actually in September, I started for him. So of 2010. So
yeah,
I didn't follow up right away. And then we dug into it a little more. So I was excited. And I also was kind of like, I think ignorant, and it worked out. Like I didn't know anything. Like I knew how to drive a truck, and I had a lot of opinions.
Yep.
But the learning was about to begin.
That's awesome. And I mean, having a mentor to help with that transition is fantastic. I am curious. So he had his own trucks.
Yeah.
What I know a lot of what you guys do are heavy haul and big equipment. Is that what he did as well? Or is it?
No, so he was mainly doing local, you know, moving like lifts for, like construction companies around and stuff like that. So it was all local. We have one customer today that he worked with back then, but that was it. So I took it more to over the road. So from 2010 to 2012, I'd work for him. So I built it, like my wife and I built it up to about 12 trucks. And then in 2012, it was ours. In January, like we bought him out. I bought one rig and we were off to the races. So. Yeah.
And did you always have a vision for getting up to like 50 trucks or?
So it wasn't always 50. Like, so I knew early on that I wanted help in the office for the flexibility. Yeah. So I think back then, and I wish I would have journaled more back then, but back then I think I was shooting for 25, 30 trucks. Yeah. And so that's with owner operators included. And then, you know, eventually, because we started at 12, I believe it was. But yeah, like our first hire, the crazy thing is, so in January we bought it 2012 and so my wife was, pregnant with our son, Alex, who was going to be born in April. And so it dawned on me in like February that there's a possible, a possible accident happening here where we're going to have to be at the hospital. And also all these 12 trucks are going to be expecting loads. So I pulled in our first, I talked to one of my drivers and Darren came in as our first dispatcher and we avoided that crisis. But yeah, I think he started in March and like, you know, 30 days later, Alex was born. So that happened kind of quick there.
Yeah.
And we started there again, you add a dispatcher, you got to pay him. And so you should add more trucks. So you got to be careful. Like we kind of got trapped in this rat race of, you know, when we add a dispatcher, you add more trucks, you have all that overhead. So it was interesting.
Yeah. And that's, you know, the growing, you know, comes with its own challenges. You've mentioned a couple of them.
Yeah.
I'm curious to what other challenges are like a lot of our audience is a smaller fleets. Maybe they're looking to grow and maybe there's things, or even just starting an owner operator business really with one truck. There's a lot of costs involved. There's a lot of things that they need to think about. That's, you know, versus driving truck, right? Driving truck and then managing a business is completely different.
Yeah.
What are some of those challenges and what kind of advice you have for someone looking to grow?
Yeah. So, I mean, I just heard this, like, I think yesterday, it's called growing pains and not growing joys. And like, that's one of the realest statements I heard in a while. And so when you're growing, like, I think what we did, we pushed it pretty hard at adding trucks and it caused a lot of turmoil because we didn't have the systems and processes. So you need to have, like, that's a big part of even where we're at today at, you know, just right at 50 trucks. We're really trying to refine our systems, our structure, our process. So that needs to, I think if we would have had that earlier, that would have helped us tremendously. The other big thing is like, we also have like, advisors now for the financial end of it. And they helped us get onto a budget and you know, get that clarified. And, you know, now we operate from a budget. So we, you know, we do oversize. So when it gets slow in November and December, our trucks don't make quite as much money because they can't, you know, we're getting permits. So you have to shut down at dark and all that stuff. Yeah. So we got to figure that in. We're also over the road. So our guys want to be home for the holidays. They'll take off a week or two for deer season or whatever, because they're out all, you know, they're out a lot. Yeah. So I think, I guess I wish I would have had some of these advising, like coaches and advisors earlier. Yeah. That's a huge thing.
Team mentorship, yeah. Things like that is very, very, very yeah. critical. I agree.
Yeah. And the other thing is like we in 2017, our advisors said, hey, you should get new trucks. Like we were spending a ton of money on repairs.
Yeah.
And that's another thing where you can look at your repair bill and say, okay, you know, it might be big or small, whatever, but when it's a repair bill, it means it's in the shop and it's not making money. Yeah. So you got to remember it pulls down your top line revenue. The other thing that is kind of unspoken is the driver aggravation. And the other thing is the customer, you know, did you get the load delivered on yep. time? Like, so in 2017, we started buying new trucks and we were in no position to buy new trucks. We 100% financed the things and we just started, but that was a game changer.
Yeah.
The more I evolve in my, you know, my journey, the more I look at debt as it adds an element to risk. I don't like it as much. Like how we got to where we are, we used a lot of debt, but I also am kind of like backing that down a little bit and trying to stabilize and you know. But the new trucks cut down on the repair bills and keep the top line revenue steady, and the drivers love it.
Well, and does that probably help too with like insurance? I know insurance covers like a large breadth of mm-hmm. other things and factors, but a newer vehicle can help lower that yeah. premium.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I guess for us, our physical damage, you know, premium went up just because we had so much money wrapped up in trucks. But yeah, like I feel like our customer service has greatly improved, at least if you measure it against some of our competitors that aren't running, like they tell us like, hey, you guys get there every time, don't break down. Now there's some times where we do break down, and we're moving earth to try to make sure everything
yep.
Happens on time. But yeah.
And I am curious, so we're talking about growth and we're talking about, you know, you mentioned some downtime during the winter for some of your fleet. Does that lead you, first off, it's nice that you had a customer base to begin with in the first mm-hmm. place to help you with that growth process. Because finding new customers from the very beginning is another totally yeah. different game. And then of course balancing that with customer loads, with spot market and all of that. And we can touch on some of that a little bit later, but I am curious, you know, you do reefer and vans and, you know, heavy haul. And I know you have a brokerage now too. Is that part of that balance of keeping money coming in during those slow times?
Well, we sold off the reefers.
Okay.
So we're out of the reefer and the van. So we simply actually, and that happened. So we got into reefer during COVID because we were like, hey, let's diversify. We thought maybe construction was going to get shut down. So we had rented a bunch and then we basically, got a build slot from another company of about 5 or 6 reefers, maybe 7 actually. So we just took delivery of those. And we did that for a while, maybe two or three years, but we're pretty good at the flatbed game and the heavy haul. And then when we compared them and looked at the appointment time with the reefers and, you know, we run e-logs, so like we're not going to be outlawing the stuff and trying to make all these crazy appointments. So we decided just to get out of that game. And that was a tough decision because it felt like a failure. However, I do think we could have made that successful. It would have just took more time and possibly scaled it up another 10 trucks at least to be attractive to some of these other customers. Right. So So we closed that down. And I think that was a good thing because it did allow us to really focus on what we're good at. So we niched down and got aggressive in doing what we already were good at.
Yeah, that's a good point. You balancing your strengths versus, you know, diversification's good, but to some point.
Yeah. So you were saying like diversifying against like the market or the ups and the downs and all that. And the way I think about that, so we are niche on flatbed, step deck, and RGN. The way I kind of think about that is being the top carrier in your customer carrier network. Yes. Like I think, and I don't know that, you know, this is just my idea. I don't, and I think it works. I mean, it seemed to work, but it's not like I talk to, I guess we do talk to our customers about that. Like, hey, where are we at? How can we do better? And we make sure we're aligned. But my philosophy is if you're in the top one or two, you know, in your customer carrier network versus if you're on like the edge, say you're 5, 6, 7, or 8, you're on the fringes. When it gets slow, you probably won't be affected. You'll be insulated a little more. So that's how I think about that. So we try to like our customer sales process is super long, so we're not pushy. So we just remind them we're still here. We call them, you know, every other month or every half year, depending what they say.
Right.
And we just remind them we're still here. We're not going anywhere. When you need us, let us know. And then that seems to work. Like over time, we start. You know, it'll take 2-3 years to get a customer, but once you get them, you really we work hard to align. And you know, our what we talk about in our business is we want to be an extension of their business. So they're not in the trucking business, they might be manufacturing, but we want to be an extension of them. So we have to, what are their core values? What do they struggle with? And then how do we like help them solve it? So that seems to help. Like it, I wouldn't say it's bulletproof. We're definitely feeling this freight, current freight market for the last 2-3 years, whatever it is. But I do think, it could have been a lot worse if we weren't focused on that.
And I do want to touch a little bit on the market in a little bit. But before we do, you know, I know you guys also started a new branch out in Arizona relatively recently.
Yeah.
What spurred that to happen?
Yeah. So that was, that's crazy. I did not really expect that. Like you had asked if I seen. so I, when I, you know, 10 years ago, I wouldn't have said that. However, that was one of our favorite customers ask us to move out there. So we moved, it was about 10 trucks out there. Now we have drivers that live out there and some of our guys, you know, from PA will go out and they'll spend a month or so out running around.
Yeah.
But that's been really good. And the only reason we did that is because our customer asked. And, you know, at first we actually declined. I think that was, I believe it was the summer of 2021. And we had a bunch of new trucks. We just bought a bunch of new trucks. And we were like, man, we got to focus on this here and learn how to run the company here. But then I think what happened is I went through the winter of 2021, 22. And I was like, man, wouldn't it be cool if we could go someplace warm and have a good excuse to like go out there? No. So I considered it again. The opportunity was still on the table. And in May of 22, we started our hauling our loads, first loads from out there.
And that's honestly how CNS grew into all the different services we had was, hey, a customer's like, can you do this for us? Sure, we'll look into it.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. You know, I'm a West Coast boy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, knowing that you're out there near Phoenix and is fantastic. But it does bring up, you know, Phoenix is right outside of California, and there's so many rules and regulations of crossing that border. And I know you deliver freight in there.
Yeah.
What's that relationship like with freight going in and out of California and following their rules?
I mean, so that's one reason we have all new trucks, all the emissions, all that stuff. I mean, man, I would love not to have all that. And if we weren't going in and out of the ports and like going in and out of California, we would probably be trying to have more glider, glider kits and all that. Cause it is a huge cost. And the sensors that go down, it's a big frustration, but we it's one of those things we just embrace the change and make the best of it. So we go into California quite a bit. We have You know, there's multiple loads going in every week into Southern California. And then we do a lot of Northern California. So we're in there every week, multiple times. Yeah. It's just one of those things we kind of put up with it.
Exactly. It tends to be the case.
Yeah.
There's good money to be made there, but there's some stuff that you have to deal with.
Yeah. It's nuts.
And then lastly too, I know faith plays a big part in how you look at core values, how you look at the company and growing a team. I'm curious how does that transition to one, how you react with growing pains, mm-hmm. but also two, how you treat customers and how you treat employees.
Yeah. So I think, you know, the biggest thing is to have what I think is where it's really relevant and we focus on it every single day is internally, like with our drivers, with our office guys, the customers, it shows up when there's issues,
right?
You know, when everything's good, everything's good. When something bad happens, then it's how you handle them. And then it's a breath of fresh air. If you know, everybody knows it's trucking, stuff is going to happen. You got to be quick to communicate upfront, maybe show up with, you know, hey, here's this issue. And then a solution, you know, bad news doesn't get better with time. So you got to be upfront. But where I look at it as for our drivers and our team is really focusing on the culture and having a good work environment. And that is, you know, we're still learning how to do that. But I think we have it pretty good, but you can't tolerate anything less than the standard. So we have our core values in place. And when we hire them, anybody, we go over them and that's how we make the hire. Can you adapt to this? We're good stewards. We take care of our trucks. We communicate. Communication is another one. So we're open, honest, and honorable. Positive influence. So when you show, you know, we're going to be a positive influence. You show up to the job site. You're going to try to make the guy's day better, not worse. And then personal growth, that is important across the whole company, but especially in the office because we're a small company. So there's only like 8 of us in there. And we're all growing. And if you're not growing, you get left behind pretty quick and it shows. So it's looking for like folks with open mindsets that are willing to grow. So that's, you know, and that really helps also like when say there's a driver issue and it's communication where he might be, you know, cursing at somebody. Okay, we just don't do that. We told you that up front and we're just clear, like, hey, this is where we stand. We're not going to deal with it. And, you know, stewardships take care of the truck. So we'll try to take care of it the best we can. We expect you to do the same. So it just clarifies things. It also gives the whole team, like, it gives them tools to work with.
Yes.
You know, in the office.
That's awesome.
That's how we handle it.
Yeah.
Don't have to ask me everything.
Exactly.
So, yeah, just do what it says on the wall.
I love that.
At CNS Driver Training Center, we're a PennDOT approved third-party tester, making it easy for anyone who trains in Pennsylvania to complete their CDL test here, no matter your home state. Once you pass, your home state will issue your license. To qualify for testing, all ELDT theory and behind-the-wheel requirements must be completed. Whether you're another CDL school or a company with an in-house training, we can handle multiple tests in a day for you and your team. Have you hired a driver who already holds a CDL? If your company needs road tests for new hires, join the many companies that trust us to evaluate their drivers. We're here to accommodate your testing needs, reliably and professionally. Choose CNS Driver Training Center for trusted, convenient CDL testing. Contact us today to schedule.
I do want to dive into a little bit of the people factor and that side of it. But before we do, freight market and just the fluctuations, you know, I know being out on the West Coast, you know, you guys go to the ports a lot. And the West Coast, maybe it was the 8 time. There was a whole lot of issues with the Portland freight or the Portland getting their imports from, I guess it was from China and other stuff that they started rerouting to other locations. And that dropped a lot out there. Of course, COVID had a whole lot of delays. And then you have things like the Panama Canal, that mm-hmm. ship that got stuck and then caused even more delays. I'm just curious with
that, and just when you just see other types of the cyclical nature of freight in general, how do you handle that, and what's the best way to approach it?
Well, we don't see those delays very much because we're working for our shippers and they're inland. So it's not like, it's not like we're hauling off the ports. Now we are here on the East Coast. We're hauling machinery out of the ports of Baltimore. So there's times where, you know, we'll hear a ship getting delayed or rerouted and that'll hold up maybe, you know, it could be 15 loads that are coming in or whatever. I would say we're pretty insulated from that. You know, and there is, over the winter, we haul a lot of combines off the port of Baltimore to Western Canada and stuff. And, you know, those stop over winter. So we do know that's, you know, they kind of shut down at November and they start up in, you know, February, March again. So like we have that, that's an experience, I guess. We kind of know our customers, we're talking to them, stuff like that. So it helps us avoid that. I'm definitely talking to like our customers now with the tariffs and stuff, you know, and just seeing what they see, because we do haul steel off the ports that's imported. So, you know, nobody really knows. They're all just taking it day by day.
And I know spot market is more of a tool to just make sure that the truck has something to come back home with or something like that. Yeah. How do you handle the spot market?
Yeah. So, I mean, I would say that's a necessary evil. I'm not a fan of it. So we use it. We're exposed about 25%. So we're 100% direct freight outbound and about, you know, 50 or so, maybe more inbound.
Right.
So like that's actually my role. One of my roles at the company is to figure out, okay, we have trucks going to, say, Chicago every week, and we're hauling load board loads back. We shouldn't be doing that. What customer out there needs freight coming east? We go to Jersey, we go to, you know, the East Coast, and there's some people don't like that. But that's our home. So we got to go back. Like my job is to get customers, get set up with these big customers that have maybe multiple locations with freight coming back to the East Coast, or back to Phoenix. So, and I enjoy that. And so that's how we handle it. Like if we see every week we're in an area and we need freight, we start looking who has freight coming east, you know, out to Phoenix. So,
and I'm curious, cause a lot of the heavy haul stuff, there's a lot of rules, regulations, permitting, mapping out bridges and tunnels. Is that something that your dispatch team or something handles internally, or do you use a third party to handle that?
So we used a third party up until, I guess we're still using a third party. We do some of it in-house. My brother, Travis, is just starting his new company, and that's going to be a permit agency. So we're going to move everything over to him. He's going to be doing that here starting in March, actually.
Yeah.
So, Travis, my younger brother, was always kind of led the heavy haul. And so we learned so much. I think we bought our first heavy haul rig, and it wasn't even a big rig. It was just an RGN in 2016. But then we slowly grew from there, and he kind of led that whole thing. So, you know, a good permit guy can make or break it. It's insane. Every now and then we use another company that, you know, they might have a cool online portal and a bunch of people in a room getting permits. But if you need a guy that can know the route, it creates a tremendous amount of headache if you don't.
Yes.
Because it ends up rerouting you down some skinny roads. And we just brought in two loads out of Nevada into West Virginia, I believe it was. They're 19 wides. So like, you know, the road isn't much wider than that if you're on a small road.
Right.
So you need to, it makes a driver's job so much harder if you don't have a good agent there.
Exactly.
Making sure you get the right route.
Yep. Make the drivers happy.
Yeah. Definitely.
I am curious too, then we touched a little bit on it, but like with freight in general, like a lot of aluminum and things like that you guys haul. I know, the president's talking about tariffs. Mm-hmm. Does that affect your shippers or the people that you work with? And does that affect you guys, or how do you balance some of that?
Yeah. So we were just at one of our customers this week. And, you know, they, I feel like a lot of these manufacturers use imported steel and aluminum. So they're all saying like, hey, it seems like their price is going to go up. So that's not, you know, and if the price goes up, I'm guessing that'll slow down the purchasing. People might start trying to repair stuff sooner or whatever. We didn't see anything yet, but I think it's going to affect us. The only other, I guess, hedge against it, you know, we're set up with a lot of steel companies in US, you know, will they get busier, because of this demand?
Right.
You know, I would hope they've been slow for years, is what we've been hearing. And, you know, we get a little bit of volume, but not like it was, you know, 5 years ago. So we'll see, I guess. It's an interesting thing. Like I would love to see the steel mills get busier in the US.
Yeah, makes sense. I mean, there's that balance. You know, it's something's going to work out in the end. It's just the headaches until that happens for sure. And I know, so before we move on to safety and drivers and things like that, your newest division is the brokerage department. Yeah. So working with owner operators and managing freight, especially when your own vehicles are unavailable. How do you balance growing that? And what's that piece like?
Yeah, so that's, I mean, we've had our freight brokerage since 2012. So we've had it since the beginning, but it was always an overflow. Like what we're doing in the next 5 years is going to be like kind of separating it out. It is a separate entity, but like just treating it like its own and not just a, you know, an afterthought. So we want to grow that. So we have a guy that is going to go full-time into that business. And then the idea is to scale it up and have, you know, a team of five or so people there. The big thing is getting the customers that allow you to broker.
Right.
Because a lot of customers, especially in a tight market, they're going to be very picky with who they work with. Yep. You know, that's why I grew the asset base first, is because every time I would call, they would wonder if we're asset based. And so we scaled that up to where we can handle a good amount of volume. Now it's like, but the numbers work very well on a brokerage because it's very asset light. You have a computer and a guy, and you move freight. So now the challenge, I guess, is to get a customer that's okay to broker and then to get favorable rates for the customer and the owner operator.
Yes, that's true.
And the other thing is to throw the loads out on the board. You're getting just anybody calling and hauling these loads, and that's not what we sell to our customers. So we want to grow that brokerage, like that carrier network, organically, slowly add to it. So it's going to be different challenges, and we are just starting in that. So it'll be, you know, I'm excited about it. At the same time, I feel like I know so much about the asset side of the business. This is it's a whole different can of worms. And I have to think through it a little bit of how to, you know, make it work.
Yeah.
It's easy to grow an asset-based trucking company. You just buy trucks, and then you put drivers in them, and then you get loads. Like, that's, you know, got pretty good at doing that. But, yeah, now this is different.
Right. So I want to transition now to sort of the fleet, driver safety, and people. I know, you know, especially with the heavy haul and the large equipment that you guys are hauling, what does it take when you're hiring someone? You know, obviously experience helps, but there's a lot of mentality from cargo securement. Gosh, I don't write articles on that because it's just way too complicated, but I might someday. And it's just, what do you look for when you're trying to grow people and drivers and being able to handle the different types of freight that you guys deal with?
So when we're looking at heavy haul drivers, so we have, you know, we have probably 30 flatbeds, and then the rest are like step decks, RGNs, stuff like that. So specialized. So a lot of times we don't hire guys straight, you know, from someone else. They're working in our flatbed division. So we kind of know who we're dealing with, how they handle themselves under pressure.
Yeah.
Do they take responsibility and ownership? You know, we're not coming down on them when stuff goes wrong, and we deal with it and move on. But it's not like we want to see if they take ownership or not.
Right.
Because you can't have a guy just making excuses if he beats something up and you put him on this huge load. You need someone to take ownership. So we look, that's the first thing. So we're looking at how he handles the pressure, the mindset. Is he always in a hurry? You know, right. we have $2.5 million of cargo insurance. I cannot have a guy hammer down going down the road in the left lane in a hurry with $2 million worth of cargo.
Yep.
So like that is a hard pass. If the guy's always, you know, in a hurry and trying to rush things, we're not going to take that chance. So we look really at the individual first, and then, you know, the know-how comes kind of second. They've been in the flatbed. They know how to chain it down. They know the laws. They'll get into new pieces of equipment here that might have a different chain tie-down stuff, but that you can all work through. The guy has common sense. He takes his time. He asks questions. He's not too proud to ask questions. You know, that's another thing. Can the guy ask questions?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think a dangerous spot to be is like to hire a Mr. Know-it-all that maybe doesn't quite know it all.
Yep.
And, you know, so stuff like that is kind of what we look for.
That makes sense. And it makes sense, too, to have that grow from within and grow out. But I guess further down from the specialized to any other hauls that you do, when you think about hiring drivers, you know, you talk a lot about company culture, and what's that process like when you do hire a new driver? You know, you want to get them on board with how you guys look at things. What are those kind of characteristics that you look like, and what's that transition for joining the team?
I feel like we struggled there for a bunch of years. We didn't have a training program. Now we have a driver trainer, and we also, what happens is they come in. So we have a couple phone calls, and they talk to Matt. He's the gatekeeper, and he's a much better hiring person than I am. I would actually end up selling the company and why I think they should work with us, and Matt puts the brakes on, and he you know, just kind of asks more questions. Yeah. So that got a lot better. So we have more qualified leads coming in. And then first of all, they come in the office and they hang out with us for a day and a half. And then, so we're teaching them our systems, the fuel cards, all that stuff. We give them iPads with our Samsara and the load board app the dispatch app and all that.
Yep.
And so yeah, that's in the office Monday and Tuesday. And then they go with our driver trainer. And then they're a lot of times, so that might be, say, flatbed guys. So they're going to our local customers, and they're seeing the places. We talk to them. You know, we're teaching them the process. So they might go unload a few loads, send in the bill lading, how to work the iPad, all that. So that has really smoothed it out. And I think it's a better experience for the drivers, too, because they feel like they're going into it. You know, they're not going into it blind.
Yes.
And then our driver trainer, they have a relationship built towards the end of the week because they're, you know, together for the whole week. And then, you know, he's asking answering questions at, you know, transitioning that transition out. So a lot of times, like, we're hiring guys that know how to drive truck. Like, this is not, we have to have 3 years of experience, and we're looking at their driver, where they worked before, their driver history. So these guys know what they're doing. We just need to teach them how we expect it done.
Exactly.
And what our customers expect. Because, like I said, to be in the top one or two in your customer, your carrier network, you have to be closely aligned with them and take it serious what's important, or treat it seriously what's important to them. So we have to have the driver adopt that as well.
Right.
So it comes down to that mindset and attitude. The personal growth, is this driver willing to adapt and align with what we're asking, because it's what the customer's asking for.
Yep.
It's not like we're just trying to throw a curveball and see if they can handle it. It's like, there's a reason.
Totally. And so much of the, you know, people in the trucking industry, when they complain about driver turnover, it's that first 90-120 days, that's where the driver turnover issue is. And if you have that open communication, expectations and smooth transition, I think that's what reduces it the most.
Yeah, I agree. And I feel like I'm really focusing on our driver retention rate right now. And I kept hearing a couple different times, there's a few companies out there that have like an 8-year retention or driver tenure.
Right.
And I was like, man, I didn't even know what ours was. We have some guys that have been around for 6 to 8 years, but then we have this, like, it seems like out of the 50 trucks, we always have about 5 trucks that are just kind of, people come in and they leave again in a year or whatever. And so I'm trying to fix that. So I want to get our average up to at least 8 years, and we're at 2.75 right now. So some of that, I feel like we did it to ourselves with growing so fast, because there's a ton of change. You know, there's dispatch software changes. There's, you know, all the different stuff that comes along with putting processes and systems so you can actually have an organized company. You have to implement that, and you know, guys they're like, screw this, I'm out of here. So I feel like now the next chapter, we're going to be focused on that driver retention rate and dialing that in.
That's awesome. So. And then when you think about fleet safety and some of the technology, you know, there's a lot that's, you know, needed, whether it's from insurance to general requirements to, hey, you're hauling $2 million cargo. Mm-hmm. What's some of that fleet safety technology you guys use?
Yeah, so, I mean, the big one that we use a lot is the Samsara e-log. So they have the driver safety score. So yes. I would say we focus on that the most, you know, and we don't tolerate anything below, I think it's 75 or 80. Right. And because we have the majority of the fleet's above 95. And if we have a guy that's at 76, and barely hanging on and almost like, we have to let them go for that. Like, we have a policy like, hey, everybody's up here.
Right.
Why can't you do that? Yeah. And, you know, another thing is like with insurance kind of runs the trucking world. Like if you let that get out of control, they will incentivize you by charging higher premiums to get it back under control.
Right.
So we have a pretty, like we give our guys $1,800 a quarter if they can hit the top tier of safety score, which I think is 95 to 100. And a lot of guys hang at like 98, 99. And then we also, like on there, it's pretty easy to track the idle percentage.
Right.
So those two things can, you know, we try to incentivize that. We're talking about the safety score a lot, you know, and then just being clear up front when we hire them, like, this is important. You know, we're going to be watching this.
Yeah.
So.
That makes complete sense. And again, it's that expectation. It's that willingness to, you know, whether it's company culture or getting that team on board for that common goal. I mean, that's fantastic. And I mean, it makes sense. You have to have those. Hey, if you drop down too far, it's going to happen.
I think about it like I want reward and consequences. Yes. So, you know, I think in the past it was all consequences. Like we had. And so now I'm trying to, you know, reward guys for, you know, that put in the effort. This is valuable to us. And then put my money where the mouth is.
I know you use a lot of Peterbilt 389s, mm-hmm. and there's new models that are coming out, the 589s. Yeah. What do you think about that one?
Yeah.
And what do you look for when you look for a truck?
Yeah, so we have all, well, not all anymore. We have, I think, 48 or 49 389 Peterbilts.
Yeah.
And we love those. And I grew up driving, like, Dad always had Peterbilts, and that's what I started in. So I just started out, I was a Peterbilt fan. Nothing really against Kenworth. It's just not what I started in. So, so that's what we have primarily. Now, I'm not a fan of the new model. Eventually, I might warm up to it. And some of them look pretty cool, but you got to do a ton of modifications to it, I think, in order to make it look decent. We switched to W900s here last year. We got one, and we have another one coming here probably this month. And we're going to just buy those until we stop making W9s, and then we'll go from there.
There you go.
So, I look at, as far as the trucks, like, we like cool trucks, and we like to stand out. The big thing is we do like cool trucks. The other big thing is it attracts good drivers.
Right.
So we get like an owner operator mindset type driver. And that's huge for what we're trying to do. We're not trying to be the biggest trucking company.
Right.
So we're not going to even compete in that space. So we want to try to be the best.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean we have to be the best in the U.S. It means we have to be the best in our customer carrier network.
Correct.
So you're not like, it's not like you're competing against everybody. You're competing against, like, when you're in a customer, are you one or two?
Right.
And if you're two, why aren't you one? Like, that's a good question to answer. So,
and then you guys have your own in team, maintenance, division, right? And so was it always relatively inter? I know you guys, I've actually driven out in that area a lot.
Yeah.
I live out there, but like, you got great facility. Mm-hmm. What's it like having that own maintenance crew versus having it outsourced? And
yeah, I mean, that's a big, it's a big deal. Now with the newer trucks, our maintenance is lower, but I mean, we have a team of like four guys, and I would say it's a necessity. Now, if you're small, like say you have three trucks or something, you know, there you can probably get away with having a guy come in on a Saturday or whatever. But what we're doing with 50 trucks, like there's always trailers or trucks that need something. So that was a game changer. So back, you know, my brothers and I had a partnership, and we got that started in 2015. It was a repair shop. And then, so that was focused on fleet maintenance for our company. And then I believe it was in about 2000, I don't know if it was 2020 or 2021, my brother Dallas, he wanted to go more like customizing trucks and fabbing trucks, stuff like that. We sold our shares, and my brother Travis and I sold our shares to Dallas, and then he turned in that into Blackworth custom trucks. So they built a lot of cool stuff. So now we have our own shop guys now. So yeah, either way, like I think if you're at, you know, maybe at 10 to 15 trucks, you should probably have your own mechanic like full time. But no, it definitely keeps things moving. And that's the other thing on, you know, having the 389 Peterbilts and W9s, like that attracts the right driver. It looks good showing up to the customer. And then the exit plan for those trucks, if you have a good maintenance program and their owner-operator specs, you can have a wait list for your trucks.
Right.
So it's a good exit strategy as well when you go to sell them. Hey, here's the records. You have, like, it's bulletproof.
Yeah.
So that's something I think about.
How long do you tend to keep the trucks?
Well, if they keep making 389s, I would have probably sold them at 500,000 miles and just, but now I'm thinking maybe 1 million.
Yeah.
I really wish Peterbilt would keep making the 389. So, but no, we'll probably stretch it out to 1 million and then maybe go from there. Like, I got to see what our maintenance cost does the downtime. Like, that's one thing I'm keeping. I'm holding a little loosely there. I'm figuring it out. First time doing this.
Exactly. Flipping to regulations, I'm just curious, you know, DOT makes a lot of changes. Recently, there's been a lot of changes, and they're on a break for a little bit, but there's going to be a lot of stuff on the roadmap. How do you deal with managing changing regulations?
I guess we stay in the know, like with different news sources, and then with you guys, with CNS, Truckers Paper Trail, we also work with them.
Yes.
But like we rely on third party. So you guys and Truckers Paper Trail, we also have Matt he's compliance and safety in our office. So he's kind of keeping ahead of all that, you know, and I don't get too excited until it actually
for sure
happens.
For
like
sure.
There's a lot of talk and I just will deal with it when it comes.
I agree. I won't write an article on it until it's actually like, oh, the deadline's coming up. Like,
right. Yeah.
It makes sense. Speaking of CNS, I believe we've worked with you throughout the years in different ways. I'm just curious, how has that relationship been and how do we, like, growing a company and having someone work alongside you on safety?
Yeah, that's actually been really huge. So, like, I worked with CNS, I think it was from very early on. I don't know if it would have been 2012 or 13. I'm not even sure. But I know it was with John and Adam. Yeah. And there was not all these other 50 people.
Yep.
So it was way back, and that's been really good because they manage our driver files. And so again, if I was, say we were at 20 trucks, I would probably have all the driver file management, all the hire, like all that paperwork done by CNS.
Right.
Now we're at a size where we can have it in-house and it makes sense. It makes sense for us, but that doesn't mean like it's a big liability to have that stuff wrong. So you want somebody doing it right. So it's either hire someone yourself if you can handle the payroll, or hire it out, because, you know, our relationship with, you know, you guys, CNS, has been great. You help us data queue stuff. Yep. Where our driver, you know, like say it's a DOT or an accident that was written up incorrect, like we got it taken off our record.
Right.
That's been huge. Melanie is awesome down in, yes, downstairs, like just handling all the plates and registries and all that stuff.
So, yeah. No, well, I'm curious too, you know, a lot of, you know, there's mistakes that tend to happen, accidents, mm-hmm, crashes and things, or, you know, that's why you have insurance. Mm-hmm. I'm curious on the litigation piece. Mm-hmm. How do you handle or approach litigation?
We didn't have anything to really speak of to where, you know.
That's nice.
Yeah, it is. It is. Like, we didn't have a ton of stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think here. We did have some wrongful, I don't know what you call it. Somebody did rip us off, hit the truck, and sued for like $1 million. There's two people sued, mm-hmm, for $1 million each. Like, but that, you know, it was dealt with the insurance company. It eventually got reduced and thrown out. But it's crazy what people try to get rich off of the trucking company.
For sure. I've written a couple articles, yeah, on that, and it's just like, it's a game for them. And it's got real,
right,
situation there, like,
right. And I try to tell the guys, like, the way we operate and how we handle things, we're writing a story, so when something bad happens, we can say, here, look, we do it the right way, we have all of our stuff in a row, you know. And so if we're a bunch of outlaws and then something bad happens, they'll, you know, hey, they'll look at that and they'll see it. But we're writing the story every day. And it's so making sure you have that stuff buttoned up, so when it happens,
right,
it's already, like, you can show a track record.
Exactly.
You know, that track record is huge today.
Yes. I know we're wrapping up on our time, and I could probably chat,
yeah,
for another hour with you. But I'm just curious, you know, talking about growth and moving forward, the vision forward, what does the roadmap look like for you guys?
It's a bit different than the last 5 to 10 years. So the last, looking back, so we've been in business 13 years now, or over 13 years. It was grow and add trucks and add people in the office, all that. So now it's a bit different. So it's more focused on refining our systems. We're going to continue to become more specialized. So we have some revenue targets that we would like to hit with the same amount of trucks.
Right.
So that means we're going to become a little more specialized, probably add some more heavy haulers in. So we just added 11 axle last month. We're getting the truck for it this month. So that 11 axle will go on the road here soon, and maybe add a couple more of those. Build the brokerage. We're going to build that brokerage and, you know, get that spun up and crank in some decent revenue and load volume. Also, you know, reducing our debt load. You know, we bought all the new trucks, we financed them, so now it's like get stabilized there a little more. It's, and the driver retention thing, like, I want to figure that one out, because that's connected to so much, where if you have a good driver and he's been with you for 4 years, that means he's doing something right.
Yep.
The customer's getting taken care of.
Exactly.
So your customer service goes up, the dispatcher driver relationship's better. You know, you don't have this new guy that, you know, he doesn't know all the systems yet, and then also the core values. So I want to really focus on driver retention, debt reduction, and then becoming, like, refining our systems. So it's not an exciting growth goal, really, but it's more, I'm actually more excited about the next 5 years.
Oh yeah.
Because it's all stuff, like, it's stabilizing and refining.
Yep.
So yeah.
Optimize, efficiency.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's fantastic.
So, yeah.
And then when, if the market ever flips to like a, yeah, big green light, you're right there ready,
yeah,
and prepared. So.
Yeah, can't wait.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I know Ryan mentioned he wants to be a resource for you guys. If you have any questions about growing your company, different parts of the fleet, different parts of assets and things like that, if you have questions, let us, mm-hmm, know in the comments down below. We'll put his contact, yeah, information in there as well. If you're a driver looking for a good company to work for, whether it's based out of Arizona or here in Pennsylvania. We can reach out to RGM and Ryan. It's a great company, which, yeah, again, thank you. So thank you again so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on. I mean, it's been great. Yeah.
All right. With that, we'll wrap this up. As always, stay safe out there.